The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, we talk about a previous episode where me, Adam, and Justin might have sounded like douchebags. Ouch.
First time that's ever happened.
We talk about how
unbelievable.
We all have photographic memories in our own ways, including forgetful Adam.
Yeah, we figured out he's a servant.
He's a servant. That's Adam lingo. And we talk about gambling. Find out about Adam's biggest payday at the casino in big old Reno. And then we get into the questions. The first question was what we think about cannabis with workouts. That's right. Marijuana and weights.
Yeah.
Does it help?
Could get interesting.
Does it hurt? I forgot. The next question is, what is our opinion on selective androgen receptor modulators? Adam loves it when I talk like that.
Yeah.
It's
SARMs.
Then someone asked us why they don't feel their chest when they're bench pressing and how they can help change that.
So it's there.
And she
get somebody else to feel it.
They actually refer to the chest as the chesticles. That's the scientific term for the pecs.
Whoa.
And finally, what burns body fat better? Kettlebell swings or hill sprints? Find out in this episode of Mind Pump.
The ultimate showdown.
Also, 3 days left for our Prime Bundle. The Prime Bundle includes MAPS Prime Pro and MAPS Prime, both of which include self-assessment tools. Prime Pro is your correctional version of Prime, and then regular Prime, it teaches you how to prime your workouts. These are programs that are easily our most valuable programs, especially if you're in the fitness industry or if you're a professional that works with people's bodies, like a physical therapist or a chiropractor. Both those programs will make you much better at your job. It brings you tremendous value. And if you're just a regular person wanting to work out, feel better, move better, again, those programs are also for you. The Prime Bundle takes both programs, discounts them greatly, and it's also on sale on top of that, and there's only 3 days left for that. You can find that at mindpumpmedia.com. Our episode in the car, dude, was so douchey in the beginning, and then Adam's like, yeah, bang that chick, and then you hear Justin in the background laughing like this. I was like, oh, shit.
Did I really say bang?
Well, you'd say stuff. I mean, just
because that sounds bad.
Just the conversation.
Totally.
Well, there's
the conversation we had. Like
talking about fucking and having sex, and then if I
does that not sound douchey?
Bro, bang that chick sounds really bad. I hope I didn't say that.
The first 30 minutes of that whole episode is us talking about like douchey shit. Like, oh, I didn't even like
what
the way
happened to us.
I didn't like the way we sounded. Like, I'm like, what the hell? Did we really sound like that? And then every time we'd say something horrible, you hear Justin in the background.
That's right.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, right.
And then you talk about your strippers, and you're like, then the fat one comes out, and we're all like, oh. And I'm like, oh no, this sounds really bad. But then it went good, and then it got good.
Well,
because you know what it is.
You're letting our hair out,
out.
Is that that's out. Another? There's another saying that I just
put
made
that
up.
Monkey in the wrench.
Put the monkey in the wrench.
Just keep doing that shit.
It just happens.
You know what it is? It's because then you listen to the whole episode, and then we're not douches. And you know what it is? Is that when people listen to our, and I like this about us, when people listen to our podcast, it's very real, and it's very much we're vulnerable, we're sensitive, we're douchey, we're just fucking people, and we're just talking amongst ourselves as if there's no one else listening to us, and that's what you're listening to. You're listening to three dudes talk about shit, you know, like fitness and stuff like that. But we almost forget that other people are listening.
Yeah,
and it's kind of
definitely
good.
Forgot.
It's good. It might shoot us in the foot one day, but it's okay for now.
Well, I don't know. I think the more that we stay true to ourselves, like, you know, It does. Like, I agree with you. Like, the one thing when you hear something like that and you listen and you go, ah, fuck, I sound like a douchebag saying that. But then here's the thing where it's different. Like, I feel like so many people on social media platforms are trying to put this fake facade. And it's like, I'm not going to lie to people and say, like, I'm talking to you guys who I now consider like family to me and good friends. And there's a lot of stories and things that we've never shared with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they, you know, so.
Yeah, we've withheld them because we do recognize they're douchey. Right. And yeah. I think that's what happened is like, oh, I haven't told you about this story. You get excited about it and you forget that it's totally douchey.
You know what? And the other part is, too, is that when people need to understand when men are around each other, when women are around, like, if you could be a fly on the wall and listen to women's conversations, they say some shit that's embarrassing too. Guys do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we just get real comfortable and we start talking and it's just the way. But when you listen to the whole episode, then you can hear all of that too afterwards. It's just the first half hour.
I'm going to have to listen now.
Well, I think there, to me, I feel like there's this... always, well, not always, but when we, it reminded me of when we started podcasting, and there was this this pressure to, the red light goes on, right? Like, okay, we're recording now, yeah. So we need to provide content. And that was, you know, when you think about it, we're out of our element there. Like, when we come in here, it's totally different now. Now we're so comfortable sitting here and having a conversation about fitness, health, and training or anything along those lines. Sometimes the other stuff too, but...
You know what's funny is that I have my best conversations with you guys when we have the mics on. Sometimes when we're in the room,
yeah,
we sometimes save our conversations from when we put the mics on, and then we put the mics on.
100%.
And then we just have this great conversation.
Yeah, we just have like total surface stuff outside of the microphone.
Well, and I think that's a skill that we've trained ourselves to do. Like, we've realized many times where we've missed good content that didn't get put out on air, that we said, okay, listen, let's try our best to
when not someone, talk to each
yeah
other.
When yeah well we are because we're all
give you a lot of head nods
we're all go we all go our different directions after we leave Mind Pump. You know, there's a lot that happens in our lives and we are all very different and have different circles and networks and things of interest that we're each diving into and reading and researching. So you know, when one of us comes across something that wants to share it with the other two, we've learned to wait to share that to the podcast so the audience gets the experience of the other two hearing that information.
Well, dude, how many times a day do we say something like, hey, remind me to talk about,
oh, I got this story.
I got the story, but I don't want, because what happens is, and this has happened to us a couple times, we'll have this great story that we'll share with each other. And then we'll be like, oh, you should bring that up in the podcast. And then we'll tell it again on the podcast. And it's like, it feels fake because your guys' reactions are fucking fake. Like, I love the first reaction, the first time you heard it. So try and save it, you know what I mean, for when we turn on the microphones. Then I could tell you and get your real, you know, you mean your real reaction. So
keep anyway. That present wrapped. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You did remind me of a song, though, when you said red light.
Yeah. Roxanne, you don't have to turn on the red light.
Yeah,
those days are over.
See, my job.
Yeah, thank you for part one of my. Me. You're my muse.
One of my roles at Mind Pump is to spark Justin's.
And I like it when you do that way. I think you're lazy sometimes.
Better. Yeah, it's way better that
way. I can't just call it.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes you're lazy and you're just like, Justin, give me a song.
You have like a new song.
And I always defend Justin. I was like, bro, that's not fair for you to do that to him. We got over 500 episodes. You just can't call on a song to him.
Yeah, because then my go-to is going to be something I've done a gajillion times.
What song is always in your head, Justin?
Oh, it's either like...
It's Reading Rainbow.
Did you ever know that you... Or Reading Rainbow, yeah. Those two.
Why is Reading Rainbow...
I have no idea. That's how my brain works, dude. It's like,
that was a good assist, though. That was a good assist.
What's the name of the dude that was Reading Rainbow? The head guy.
What is his name?
He ended up on Star Trek with the skinny glasses.
Yeah, but he came back and they actually did a Kickstarter and then like got a couple more episodes.
Of Reading Rainbow?
Yeah. Yeah. For it's real? Like back. Yeah.
No way.
Totally. Yeah.
I love that
show. I love that show.
Dude.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch it a lot when you were kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, man. If you think about it, it's kind of lazy TV, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're going to come up with a TV show. We're going to read books. We don't ever need to come up with content. We just read a book.
It's brilliant. I love ideas.
It is. What if we did that?
Well, we're doing
what if we did another?
We are doing something similar.
Let's do another podcast where we read books.
Just read.
On the podcast.
Mind Pump, read to me.
Or do another, like a twist. Or we're stealing a page from
I would
that
do
book.
That. Yeah.
Like
Justin, did you watch Game of Thrones yet?
God damn it.
I did. Yes.
God damn. Let's not talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, why are you not watching this show?
Because who cares?
Dragons.
Gosh, I just want to punch you in your dick.
Because seriously, who
it's
cares?
So epic.
Who? Okay.
Oh, only like.
Oh, I don't like cinematic adventures.
Only like 7.5 million
like
people
epic,
care. That's all.
You know, story that ties in. You know, you see like all these characters they pull from real life type characters. Man, it's crazy.
Shut up.
It's amazing.
Fucking stupid. Amazing. You know what it is? I think I know.
Looking at me like I'm crazy.
I was quiet there. I wanted it to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, thanks.
For you guys, as uncomfortable
Appreciate
as for
that.
Me. Hearing you guys talk about some stupid shit.
It's not.
You know what it is? I think if I'm going to be objective about myself, perhaps I identify too strongly with not doing what other people do. And maybe that's why I don't watch Game of Thrones.
You're one of those guys.
That's dumb.
Or.
That is dumb.
Or.
You don't get to experience awesome shit that way.
Well,
it's popular for a reason. Well, because it's fucking awesome.
Like I said, that's viable, right? It's a very viable. I'm trying to be very objective here. Well, or.
Or you're just being stubborn.
Or. I'm doing stuff that's actually benefiting me as a human being. It's one of those two
things.
That's
how you justify it.
It's one of those two things.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
Being entertained and enjoying.
Wow, look at that.
What? How many people are watching?
Did I really nail that right on the head at 7.5? That was off the cuff,
wow.
Guy, just so you know.
So you know how you talk.
Off the cuff
you didn't
right
pre-Google
there.
Adam, Adam, do you know how you talk about my memory, how I have a picture, what is it called?
Photographic
memory. And how Justin has that with like jingles and stuff.
Yeah.
You actually do a little. You do too.
Statistics.
You just don't realize it. So
yeah,
like,
no, it's not.
You'll say
like,
a number.
He's like Rain Man.
No.
Have you figured that out yet?
He'll say a number, and then he'll pretend. Seven. He'll forget that he knew it. Yeah. He'll be like, "Wow, I nailed that! I totally get it." No, you didn't.
definitely.
You read that at some point.
I probably did. You're probably right. I was so funny. You say that, right? So when I was a kid, my mom. I have this memory of my mom. So we were in a Modesto house, which this puts me before third grade. So I don't know exactly how old I know for sure before third grade. When my mom would have guests come over to the house, she used to use me like a party trick, and she would call me out of my room, and I'd normally be in there playing with my sister or hanging out with friends, and she would love to have me rattle off all the stats of players in the Major League Baseball. So because I used to memorize all the stats of all the baseball players and like what team they played for, their batting average, how many.
Oh, wow.
And she used to like quiz me, like give me the first baseman of the Mets, and I'd tell you who it was, how many years he's playing, his batting average,
wow.
How many home runs. Like I'd be able to do
that's
that.
That's so funny. They do the same. Like when my parents had people over, they did the same thing. Where like I was in the other room, still finishing dinner, because I was the one that would always take forever to eat. And so I was left at the dinner table.
I would have never guessed that. I would think that you like crush food.
I mean, I did, but I kept eating. You know, I wasn't done yet.
Oh, so you would?
Yeah, everybody was done, and I'm like, "Where's everybody going?"
So it was like,
I'm still eating.
It was like tortoise in the hare. Like you're gonna go slow, but you're gonna
totally.
Fucking finish
honestly gonna self like I'm gonna call myself the tortoise. Like I know nobody has before, but that's totally applicable.
Okay.
Like that's my MO.
So they call you out.
So I was like sitting in there by myself, and this is when Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was real popular.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I loved that show, and like I knew the jingle and everything like crazy, you know, West Philadelphia, born and raised in the playground. Anyway, I go on and on, but so they just started it, and then like I heard my dad or someone was like, "Watch this," and he like muted it, and I was singing it, and I did it like verbatim, like we're like all the way to where the timing of it stopped, and they turned it back on, and I was right in sync and everything, and he's just like, he just does this,
it's just weird,
and I did like
it's
for
weird
everything.
Talent that
yeah,
he has.
Exactly, it didn't pay off, or maybe it is, maybe it is.
It's funny. Funny though, when you remember things like that, right? And I mean, I think
how effective is fucking advertising?
Oh my god,
they
ninja'd my entire brain.
Well, I also think about like learning how. This is also why I think future of education is going to change, because I think learning how to hack that, because we're all unique and different, right? And we've talked about Sal reading the encyclopedia as a young kid, like in this business, in the one that I did, what made me successful as a fitness leader when I worked for 24 was I was very analytical. I took the numbers down and I broke it all down, and I simplified that for personal trainers because I think a lot of them overcomplicate the business. And I thought I did a pretty good job of helping others simplify how I did. And even in this business, I am part of most of my time at night is spent going through our numbers. I'm always looking at numbers and graphing them and painting. Like I enjoy that, and I've enjoyed it since I was a kid. But I did it for baseball cards when I was a kid, and I lost that connection to that. Now through school and stuff like that, I excelled in mathematics, but I didn't push it though. And then it's funny because my last year of high school, I was done with my math. I didn't need to take any more math. I should have taken more math because I love math. I did well in it, but because I didn't need to, I chose to get out of school, half day in my senior year because I was ahead of all my units, when I wished I would have connected those dots, that was something.
Did you see math as, because for me, one of the reasons why I loved reading encyclopedias is it was like, I was looking at like the secrets of the world, like, oh my God, I can read about how everything works and I can know all the shit. Did you see math that way? Like,
I saw math the way I looked at math, and why I was drawn to math was, to me, nothing's more true. I've fallen in love with science as I've gotten older, and I've learned to appreciate science, but I didn't like science at all as a kid. Because there's so many uncertainties. It reminded me of religion. And I didn't like that about religion either, as I felt like math was so true. 2 + 2 will always be 4. And as math became more complicated, there still was always an answer. And I liked that. I liked that I had a goal, which was find the right answer.
And there is a right answer.
And there is a right. And maybe I didn't
except
get
in the quantum world.
Thank you, Justin.
Boom! Yeah. Science.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, that's where science meets math, right? So mm-hmm. I think that's what made me as a kid enjoy that. And I could, and that's how we used to debate as a young kids. I remember with my friends, my cousins, like when you would debate me about a baseball player, how I debate you, how good he is, I could rattle his stats off and his numbers. Like, you can't tell me that guy's better than this guy because that guy averages 5 more home runs than that guy, gets on base 2 more times, gets this many more outs. Like, you could argue all you want because you like him. I don't,
you've done your homework.
You like his hair and you like his color of his jersey, but I'm going to tell you right now that he's not a better player for these reasons because there's math to prove it,
Well,
so
what do you call them? Bookies? Like, they're so good at that. Like, aggregating all that data and putting it all together and then how that all interacts, like, based off the environment, based off, their wife left them or,
it's
all those factors.
If you want to predict, if you want to predict elections and stuff like that, like the most accurate places to look are bookies, because people will bet money on
that's a good point.
Who's going to win. Yeah.
Well, because they're following the math, right? Peering deeper into me,
that's all algorithms.
You can figure out why I fell in love with cards. I fell in love with that early on, learning how to trying to teach myself how to.
Do you still have baseball cards?
I do put away somewhere, like in class cases and shit.
Dude, my cousin went through his and found his God, what was it? Was it his Troy Aikman rookie card or something? Anyway, one of his cards is worth like $5,000 or something.
No
like that.
Way.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to have to go through mine.
I have a few that are worth in the hundreds.
I thought they were worthless because nobody cares about buying them now.
I used to buy Score all the time. Score cards.
I used to buy the Upper Deck ones. At the time were like the most valuable. So
Upper Deck was
was
expensive. Yeah. Then there was Don Russ. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle,
Like,
and then
Russell
Tops
was
Tops was cheap.
Tops,
Tops was the cheap one.
So all that, and why I love the game of craps, like that's by far that's my adult game for sure. That I find it's very mathematical.
Shouldn't you be playing?
And it's fast.
I can't. Yeah, but
fast.
I still haven't figured that one out.
But
yet.
Shouldn't you play? What's that one game that they say where the odds are in your favor if you're really good?
It's craps.
It's roulette.
No.
Roulette.
You're okay. You're talking about the guy who likes gambling. We're gonna debate.
I thought it was Keno or something like that.
No, craps has when you talk about the dollar to percentage and odds of winning out of all the games that are inside
there. That's why I'm horrible at gambling.
It's best in the player, has the best odds for the player if you know how to fucking do the math and play the game. Like, if you go out there and you just put it, it's very much so in the favor of the casino if you don't know how to play.
Yeah.
That's what's so beautiful about the game is that it's same thing goes for a game of Texas Hold'em. Like, there's still luck. Like, luck always plays a role in gambling, but if you can increase your odds by being mathematical about it, you can definitely kill out a majority of the competition.
What's the most you've ever won playing craps?
In a single, outing?
Yeah, that you can tell on the podcast. I don't know
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, because yeah.
I don't want
yeah,
to
some
be
of
like,
it's taxable.
Yeah, yeah, right? $1 million.
Yeah, exactly.
No, what no, year? No, I've never won that. I think the best, and it was actually Reno, not Vegas. Vegas has gotten me more. 14,000.
Fuck, that's
yeah,
not bad.
Yeah, it's yeah. I've had a couple weekends.
Dude, I went to Vegas with a buddy of mine years ago, and he invited his buddy, who had an internet gambling website. And I don't know what the website was, but it was the second at the time. So this has got to be.
He ran the website?
Hold on. It was his.
Yeah.
This has to be at least 8 to 10 years ago. So, and his website was the second largest gambling website on the internet. So this
Holy
guy was.
Holy shit. He's loaded.
Way rich. I'd never seen somebody throw money
don't
like this.
Don't tell me he's the one that got in trouble for playing as like an admin.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't know this guy. So anyway, yeah, I meet him.
I read about somebody.
He's the biggest, most awkward nerd you've ever met. Like, just this massive, nice guy, but you could tell, like, he really wanted to use his money to make friends. He meets me for the first time. He's like, Sal, what's going on? He's like, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm over here. Why are you here? It's my birthday. And he's like, oh, here, go play. He gives me, like, $500 worth of, you know, $100 chips or whatever. Then we're gambling, and he's telling me to enjoy myself to gamble. I'm like, I'm keeping this shit. I don't like gambling. $500 is mine. I watched him, no joke, in less than 10 minutes lose $25,000 on the roulette table.
Why do people do that all the time?
He put stacks of money all over the
that
fucking table.
That literally makes my balls go.
Bro, like three times.
Inside my body.
Like three times. And I'm watching him lose this money, and I can't figure out how much it is. And I'm like, how much money did you
well,
just lose?
You know, that happened right in front of me.
25 G's,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
Well, what happens when you're somebody who likes to gamble, and so I've gambled for a long time.
You feel invincible.
Well, no, what happens is as your income increases, the amount you have to resist to enjoy the game increases. Yeah. So when I remember this vividly, like I used to love to play Texas Hold'em because I could spend $100 and I could play for 10 hours.
Yeah.
Because I could manage the game, I could manage my chips, and I could play a whole night of gambling. I got to feel like I gambled, and I only
risked pie gal for me.
And I only risked $100. Well, a big part of why I enjoyed that was because that wasn't at that time in my life, I wasn't risking a lot, but it was enough to make me enjoy the thrill of potentially losing and winning. And that's what we're all chasing, is that adrenaline rush from it, right? And so, you know, as $100 became not such a big deal to lose to me, that increased, and then it became $500, then became $1,000, and then I needed to have the risk of losing $3,000 to $5,000 at a time before it was enjoyable. And so I watched that progression mm-hmm. with myself, so that, you know, when you see someone like that, it's no different than
you
gambling.
They're more numb to
it. They're no different to you gambling $200 and losing that, because your $200 is what it's like for him walking around with $25,000.
It depends on the person too, because
If you're an idiot who's gambling $25,000 and you don't have $25,000 in the bank, that's a totally different story.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're talking about an alcoholic or a drug abuser.
Right.
Yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying?
But it does depend on the person, because I get furious if I lose $5. Furious still to this day. That's why I hate gambling. I'm not a I can't stand it.
Oh, yeah, no.
That's why it's not for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's already gone. I go in there knowing it's already gone.
That's why we went to Reno and just hung out with. I just watched you gamble.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I got the free drinks. Thanks.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I lose $5, I'm like, dude, I could have bought a fucking coffee and chips or something like that.
That's your
right. Or I could have got half a movie ticket.
Good. That's fine.
You know
well,
saying?
I really believe that casinos,
I enjoy it.
Casinos and places like that, they make their big money off of lots of people like yourself who mm-hmm. aren't really gamblers, don't want to gamble, that are just trying.
It's like credit card companies. They just constantly like, mm-hmm. yeah. My
very, very first time gambling, I turned 21. I go to Vegas because I turned 21. My parents are there. We're all having a good time. And everybody's like, aren't you going to gamble? I'm like, I'm like, all right. You know, you have to, right? Because you're 21. It's like a big thing. I put a quarter in the slot machine. I won $600, and I never gambled the rest of the trip.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Got my $600. It's like profit.
Yeah.
That's pretty good discipline to be able mm-hmm. to do that. Not a lot of people have that ability. Yeah, it's the ability to walk away when you. I was good at that.
No
I was good at get to a point where I had like numbers I have in my head. Like, I'm going here. I'm willing to play with this money. If it's gone in 10 minutes, I'm done. If it lasts me all night, then it's good. If I get to a certain point, I walk away from the table. And so,
have you ever seen like big time high rollers play a gamble?
Oh god, of course. Yeah, no, I've seen you like your big ballers. They don't even have to carry their own money. Like, so when you go to big casinos, where you have major gamblers, these guys will come out and they'll just call a marker. And when they call a marker from a guy will come walk over with $1 million worth of chips. And
that's crazy.
And set it down on there. If they have that much collateral with the casino, they don't have to carry money. So I never got to that point where I had that much. You know, I've got my host and things like that, but not, like, not to where I'd
how is it Dan markers. Bilzerian, like, how does that guy, like, kill it so much in poker?
There's a lot of skill in poker, dude.
100%.
There's a lot of skill in
absolutely.
Poker.
I
know that. It's crazy that you could make, like, your wealth came from poker.
Well, you know what? Like, and
he had money before that.
I kid you not. I liked it enough. So yeah, I have a cousin.
He says he didn't, but that's him.
I have a cousin that I taught the game to who has continued to pursue it as a living.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do well at all, in fact. But, I contemplated that at one point, like, do I want to get even better at this? Because I'm not that good. Like, I can play, you know, and I understand the game. I understand the math. But, you know, where you make big money is when you learn it very, very well and you have it down mathematically really well, you just pick off people all day long that don't.
Yeah.
You know,
they're just professionals too. We talk about reading people and stuff like psychics and all that. I swear they're like on another level.
Bro, it's also a game of attrition. When these guys will sit down for these tournaments,
I know it's endurance.
They're there for 100%. Hours.
Oh, yeah. Whoever gets mentally fatigued.
We used to wait. Okay. We would wait till I'd want to gamble all day because I'd love to play cards, but I would wait till like midnight to go down to the tables.
All the tired people.
That's why I never liked it. It takes too long.
Yeah.
Man.
All the tired and all the drunk people coming in from the clubs, they sit down, they make sloppy decisions. I'm playing consistent by the numbers. Mm-hmm. You wait till the odds are high on your side. Then you push hard. Yeah. And all you need is one idiot to make a bad decision an hour. Yeah. And I rake.
All in.
I rake over $500 and all the odds are on my side. I mean, he could have won. Luck is always involved in the game. But the likelihood when the odds are that high on me, I just took advantage of some drunk idiot who's trying to show off for his girlfriend. He just came out of the club. So guys make livings off of this. Many guys, because I gamble enough that, you know, I've got to know a lot of dudes that do this for a living.
All the rounders, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sit and talk to them. Yeah, you see, when you're a regular guy goes there, you start to see the regular people. So you know who the sharks are when you get there. But if you're somebody who doesn't go all the time, you don't know who the shark is at the table.
Hi, it's my first time.
That's me.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I remember
devour him.
Are these good? Are these cards good? What should I do?
I remember getting so regular that you get to see. And then, so there'd be like three of us at a table that, like, we're all regulars, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden four fish come on and you just, and then you
he's
take
like piranhas.
You all take turns. Fold. Yeah. Fold. I'm, if one of us four sharks are sitting at this table of seven, I see three of them fold out.
You know, by the look in your eye, you're like, oh, yeah.
Or if I push some chips in right now and I have the three sharks behind me, they're going to fold out. They're not going to compete against me. Right. They're going to let me play against the, and vice versa.
Because it's easy money.
If one of them comes over, raises me, then I know that, and knowing how smart they are and they know better to even be doing that, then I feel, you know what I'm saying? So you learn, like, when you start to learn, like, who are other players, you guys start to play together and you start to fuck up people that come on tables.
That's crazy. Years ago, I went visited on vacation. I went to Monaco and went to the Monte Carlo casino, which is a kind of a tourist attraction.
It's like famous,
but you have to pay to go in there, right? Mm. The tables there were like 5,000 and 10,000 euro minimum bets.
Wow,
that was the minimum bet on a lot of these tables. And I was expecting this huge casino. It wasn't even that big. It was just the amount of money people were betting.
Well, it's a really rich area. Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. Monaco, yeah. Bro, the freaking...
They do the race there, the Formula One.
The taxi cars are $50,000 and $60,000 Mercedes. Mm-hmm. And Lamborghinis are driving by and Ferraris, like nothing. Like I saw... Yeah. I've never seen a McLaren, a legit $1 million McLaren out on the street ever, except for there. And I saw two of them.
Wow.
Like, when's the last time you saw a $1 million car drive by you?
Yeah, never.
It's a very strange place, but the casino, I remember sitting there.
I saw a Bugatti. That was pretty cool.
Oh, that's a great car.
It's a great looking car. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bring on the bird.
The sexy bird with lots of money.
Queen Qua.
The eagle has landed.
Chimera Qua.
Today's Qua is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Qua.
The eagle has landed.
Qua.
Our first question is from K Genotown. Thoughts on having some cannabis in your system on some training days? He has had some great mind-body connections using cannabis during some of his workouts.
On the same day?
Yeah. I'm really feeling this workout.
Yeah. I feel like that's in your wheelhouse, Adam.
Yeah.
Adam's pre-workout.
I'm definitely not a fan of, as much of a fan as I am of cannabis, I'm not one to do it to work out. For me, personally, I know people that do, and they absolutely love it, say it works for them, and if it works for you, but...
I hear a lot of jiu-jitsu guys
I
like to do that.
That's true.
Okay, and I get that, right? Because I could see them wanting to kind of be loose and relax a little bit while they're training. Mm-hmm. If I ever were to do this, it was when I was training for a show, and I'd have to do these hour bouts of cardio. Year round, I don't do hour bouts of cardio. Just, it's not in my regimen unless I'm trying to get ready for a show and I need to put that time in. So when I would do that, sometimes I would smoke because I would want to be just mind. I would want me to be dazed, thinking about a bunch of things, how you get when you smoke, all creative and I'm doing such easy cardio that it's not intense. I don't have to push really hard. So I would love my mind to trail and do that. Now, when I'm training, lifting weights, I want to be so in tune with my body and I don't want to be trailing off. I want to be hyper-focused. So now we could talk all day long about certain strains and how some people, when they take a higher sativa, they notice that they become hyper-focused. And when they do indica, it's the opposite. So, you have to kind of, everyone, I believe that cannabis affects everybody differently. And then I also believe that the strain, the percentage, and this is the stuff that I believe we're going to find out and learn more about in the next 5 years, because now we're finally getting to do some studies on this shit. The difference when you smoke something that has 17% THC to the ratio of 3% CBD versus one that's 1-to-1 versus one's 3 times to 1. I think that all matters.
It does, but I'll tell you what. So there's a lot of interesting anecdote now that is coming out with cannabis and athletes. Many athletes find cannabis to be a performance-enhancing drug.
For endurance.
Endurance athletes.
Yeah,
Endurance athletes. However, I have had so many people who lift weights and like to use cannabis to lift weights that I'm starting to kind of listen to what they're saying and I'm paying attention. And here's where cannabis may be okay, or I'm not going to say okay, but may benefit someone as a performance-enhancing substance with weights. Now, first off, the science is relatively conclusive in terms of performance enhancement with cannabis for explosive movements, and the science shows it's not. The science shows that under the influence,
be like, what?
Under the influence of cannabis, you're going to have less peak power output, less proprioceptive ability, and explosive power. However, there is a mind-body connection that happens with cannabis, where people will go in to try and get a pump or to isolate a muscle, squeeze, feel the stretch, feel the squeeze. And they'll do this and they'll love the effects that cannabis will give them when they're lifting weights for that particular purpose. And I can kind of understand this. I personally, I use cannabis mostly medicinally and I use it in the evening. However, I have used cannabis before yoga, before hiking, before stretching.
Oh, it's great for mobility.
And I noticed it really does a great, it really puts me in the zone for those types of things. I would hate to lift really heavy with cannabis, but I could see myself going to the gym and saying, okay, today's a focus session, or today I'm just going to go light and just squeeze the muscle and try and get a pump. Then I could see it maybe helping out a little bit. Now, from a physiological standpoint, can cannabis promote or reduce your, the way you adapt to exercise? That's a very, very good question. Now, what they're finding with high intensity exercise, especially when you start to train to exhaustion, and this is more common with endurance type activities, is your body actually releases its own endocannabinoids. So you got to understand with cannabis, which is of course
if you smoke it, it's inflammatory too.
So
you got to consider that also.
So
right?
Here's the thing. So cannabis contains what are called phytocannabinoids. Phyto meaning plant. Cannabinoids is a type of chemical molecules that are found in cannabis. your body has its own endocannabinoids, which are cannabinoids your body makes, because we have receptors for these cannabinoids. When you're under, when you train to exhaustion or you're training really hard, your body releases its own endocannabinoids because they're pain relieving, and they help you push a little harder. This is what some scientists now are attributing the runner's high to. They're actually saying, oh, maybe you actually are getting high, and it's these endocannabinoids. So I can see how maybe taking phytocannabinoids may give you that effect, and may you know, help your performance as far as like helping muscle growth. Here's something else that's interesting with cannabinoids. In animal studies, because there's a high high density amount of cannabinoid receptors in the reproductive organs of humans. So the fear was, if I have a lot of cannabinoids in my system from outside my body, like from cannabis, will I affect my body's own hormone production, or, you know, receptors to hormones? Am I going to lower testosterone? Am I going to change my hormones? Animal studies say yes. Animal studies say that cannabis or cannabinoids will lower testosterone. Human studies so far say no. When they test people who use cannabis on a regular basis, they find it does not lower testosterone. My personal opinion is the verdict is still out. I don't think there is. I can't make a definitive yes or no. What I will say is,
well, I can speak from experience on something that I find very fascinating, because and I've shared this before on the show, because of my testosterone use, I'm very prone to gyno.
Oh, gynecomastia?
Yes. And if I am on a dose of testosterone in the 250 milligram range or more per week, and I'm intaking a moderate to high intake of cannabis, I will actually flare up. And it took me a long time to put together that it was from the actual cannabis. And I've multiple times I've played with this to make sure that's what it was. And as sure as shit, if I was smoking a lot of cannabis at this time, I would be super sensitive to it and I would flare up. If I would take, and I'll take it completely out, and then my gyno would completely subside. So,
and by the way, what you're, there's actual, if you go to a doctor and you're a male and you have a gyno, which is this, the basically it's female breast tissue, so you're a man, but you're starting to produce female.
You get them boobies.
Yeah, and you start to feel it, right? Or sometimes it gets really bad and they have to surgically remove. If you go,
a lot of people don't realize that I have it, because I keep it at bay, because I can feel it. I can feel it coming on before it even happens. It's very wild.
So, and men will get it who aren't on testosterone. So like boys who go through puberty sometimes will get it. I did when I was a kid. When I went through puberty, and this is because of the spike of testosterone. Some of it gets converted to estrogen. But if you go to a doctor and you have gyno, one of the things they'll ask you is if you use cannabis, because cannabis has been connected to increased instances of gyno, especially high doses. So it might not have favorable effects on your hormone levels. This, again, the verdict isn't out yet, because the science so far says, no, it doesn't seem to negatively affect testosterone. However, anecdote and other studies are pointing that it may, in fact, do that. So I don't necessarily think cannabis is a great thing to use all the time when you're working out, because I think it may negatively affect your body's ability to adapt to exercise. Plus, we got to remember something here. Cannabinoids have an anti-inflammatory effect in the body. They do influence the way the body responds to stress. And anytime you mess with that, you are messing with the adaptation signal from exercise. And you may, in fact, be reducing things like muscle protein synthesis. I don't know of any studies that show cannabis use with exercise and protein synthesis, which is the kind of a signal of muscle growth. But I would love to see one, because I'd love to see what's happening there.
Oh, I can't wait till they have more studies around this. So I said, and I think in the next 5 years, we're going to have so much more information about something like this. But I mean,
It's important to note, like, it's being, not benign, right?
And being somebody who has been smoking cannabis for a pretty consistent basis for several years now, and I've been training for 15 plus, I can tell you from personal experience that I don't see a lot of benefit from it. I don't see a lot of drawback either, unless, for instance, like I tell you right now, if you are prone to things like that hormonally like I am, that it does throw my hormones off a little bit. And now that requires that I am smoking like a full joint in a night. Like that's a lot. That's a ton for me. Like that's for me to be doing something like that. That's a lot of cannabis to be intaking, where I typically intermittently will have it, and I have it at night, and it's like a couple hits of it and I'm good. Like that's enough to settle me down for the entire night. So,
but there's also a lot of factors you want to consider. Like if you use cannabis, if you have issues sleeping, cannabis, by the way, if you have issues sleeping, there's root causes you should solve. But in the meantime, a potential, you know, solution for that symptom to help you sleep, maybe cannabis. Will that help you build muscle? Yes. In that case, cannabis may actually help you.
That's an excellent point.
Do you have issues with autoimmune disorders like irritable bowel syndrome, like I do? Like I have.
I would not be using it to be directly trying to build muscle. That's what I'm trying to say. 100%. Right. But you're right on. I mean, I agree. Because
indirectly, I guarantee you cannabis helps me build muscle, but it's not because the cannabis is helping me build muscle. It's because cannabis helps me with my symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome, which if I get real bad with that, I ain't building no muscle. I'm not absorbing nutrients and food. So in that case, it becomes a positive for me. So it's a potent psychoactive substance. It's not benign. It can be positive for you or it can be negative for you depending on your individual situation. In terms of when you're actually performing, I think if you're doing things to exhaustion or to endurance, so far the anecdote seems to show a lot of athletes are saying, hey, man, if I use especially an edible before my race – or before my training, like I have more endurance and I can go longer. So that's kind of interesting. I think that's something we should look
at. I think that's interesting. Although I would not recommend this to anybody to pick it. I would not pick up a habit of doing this to get performance out of it. You know, I wouldn't be like, hey, you know what? I heard that this could be possible.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even use cannabis. I'm going to start using it to do. No, I don't.
Here's what's interesting.
That's a good
strategy. There have been several.
You get lost on the trail.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Whoa, it's the first time I've ever taken an edible.
I went on a 6-mile hike yesterday. I meant to do 30 minutes.
Jumps off a cliff. What happened to Bob?
So here's something that's fascinating. You can actually look this up on Google if you don't believe me. There's actual articles written on this right now. There's been a few studies that have demonstrated that people who utilize cannabis on a regular basis lower fasting insulin levels, their blood sugar levels are better controlled, and they're leaner. And they think they're leaner because of what I just said about the blood sugar and insulin. In fact, pharmaceutical companies are investing money right now, millions of dollars, on potential treatments for pre-diabetes and diabetes with cannabinoids. So there may be a fat kind of burning effect from cannabis.
Dude, once this is all legal, all you're going to see is supplements everywhere.
Already are. You already are. They're already doing it with CBD.
THC, CBD,
I'm trying to remember
everything.
If I know a lot of fat stoners. Do you know a lot of fat stoners?
I know a few.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Just
curious. But they're like very, you know, like Cheeto-y, like on the couch playing video games. Like that, they were already doing that.
Well, I think that's the risk. I think that's the risk you take.
You can't blame the cannabis.
I think
really.
That's the risk. I had this conversation with my younger brother when he first experimented with cannabis. I remember I was like 30 years old or so, and he's like at 20, and he's like, we're talking about this stuff, or he was 18 around that time.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him, like, listen, you know, I know your brother did this whole, you know, medical marijuana thing, and I did all this stuff, but I just want you to know that real easy this could turn into like something that completely distracts you. I know you enjoy the benefits of it, and he's expressing all that to me, like, well, you know, brother, I feel like it settles my anxiety down, and this thing's like closing me on why it's so great, right? And I'm like, yeah, no, I get it, bro. Yeah. I get all that, but it gets so nice that you end up doing it all the time, then you don't do fucking shit all day long.
Yeah.
So pay attention to that and
stop caring as much.
Like, get your priorities right. Don't look for an excuse to do that just because you like it so much. Appreciate it, but also respect it.
Yeah, you know what I call somebody who smokes pot and becomes a loser?
What's that?
A loser.
Already a loser.
Yeah, you're just a loser.
That's it.
That's all. Quick commercial break. Hey, people ask us all the time how they can support Mind Pump. Here's what you can do. You can go to www.brain.fm/mindpump and get 20% off Brain FM for meditation or focus. You can also go to audibletrial.com/mindpump and get a 30-day trial plus one free audio book. Lastly, you can go to getnatureblend.com/mindpump and you will get a discount on Ben Greenfield's CBD product.
Next up is TDC Fitness Eddie. What is your opinion on SARMs?
I have been getting more questions about SARMs.
It's been a long time.
Do you know why?
Since Ben Greenfield.
So I did a quick Google search of SARMs. And you know why we're getting so many questions on this? First of all, SARMs are selective androgen receptor modulators. So that's a if you don't know what that means, if that's that sounds very complicated. These are chemicals that are designed to modulate the androgen receptor in the body, or to attach to the androgen receptor to get it to express what it does. The androgen receptors are the ones that testosterone activates or attaches to. Now, the reason why I think we're getting a lot of questions on this is I Googled SARMs, and the first 10 searches that come up are these fucking websites that are pretending to write scientific articles on SARMs. Ooh, and at the end, they're basically sales funnels.
Wow. Oh,
and at the end of them...
Brilliant. Man, you make me want to Google it now.
At the end of them, they're links to how you can buy SARMs online. Mm. And these articles are so inaccurate and so terrible. Like, I'm reading them, and all they talk about is how safe they are, how awesome they are, how great they are for your health, how these are, like, if you're like, oh, look, you want to take...
I have been hearing a lot of that lately about how safe they are. I'm like, wait a minute.
Bullshit. Bullshit. It's like,
this can't be the same substance.
You know, hey, do you want to take steroids without the side effects? You know, SARMs are what we're looking for. So SARMs are these chemicals that are being developed and researched. Got to be clear here. They're being developed and researched. None of them have been approved by anybody. They have not. They're not even in phase 3 trials
in
the FDA.
Gray market, or is it in like the black market?
Well, so it's the reason why it's a gray market is because they're black market in the sense that I can't buy a SARM for human consumption, but there's this weird loophole in the law where
like animals or something.
I can buy SARMs for research purposes. Mm. So there's no regulations or very little regulations to buy certain chemicals for research purposes. Hmm. For example, I could buy Viagra, the chemical Viagra that makes Viagra, for research, you know, purposes, and you'll find places like that online. And they won't sell them in tablet form. They'll sell them in liquid form as if you're buying, and then they'll give you dosing instructions on how to take it. So SARMs are this, and you see all these articles and blogs written on SARMs about how safe they are. They're like steroids without the side effects, and studies show they build muscle and blah, blah, blah. SARMs, first and foremost, they're being researched, so they're totally, totally new, so we don't know what they do long term. So if anybody says they're safe, is a fucking liar. Number two, the doses used in the research are not the doses that people are taking to try and build muscle. If you took the dose of SARMs, for example, Osterin is one of them. If you took the dose of Osterin that they're using in research, you'd be using 1 milligram a day. The doses that people are using to try and build muscle is
like 50
to 150 milligrams a day. In the studies, they're showing that super low doses have less negative effects on the hormone systems of people or animals than taking testosterone. What I mean by that is if you take testosterone injections or steroids, one of the side effects of them is your body stops producing its own testosterone, which is a bad side effect, right? You go off and hopefully it comes back. Well, in these studies giving these people or animals these super low doses of SARMs, they're noticing an effect, but it's much smaller. So now people are like, oh shit, you can take these and not shut down your testosterone. Wrong. If you take 50 to 100 milligrams of SARMs every day, you're going to shut down your testosterone like you're taking steroids. These things attach to the androgen receptors, and what they're attempting to do is they're attempting to exert anabolic muscle-building effects without androgenic, you know, male masculinizing effects. So they're trying to give you the muscle-building effects without the masculinizing effects, and that's supposed to be this panacea. First off, the androgenic effects of testosterone and steroids are part of the reason why they build muscle so well. People don't realize this, but if you go pure anabolic, you won't build nearly as much strength and muscle as if you go androgenic. This is why some of the most popular steroids are the ones that are the most androgenic, like Trenbolone or Masteron or Anadrol. Like, those are anabolic, but they're also very androgenic. And you know this. Those people who take steroids know the ones that build the muscle also give you the most side effects. That's part of the reason why. So they're not going to build muscle like testosterone or like steroids at all. You're going to get very little muscle building effect, and you're going to get...
You're going to be risking almost the same that you would be taking testosterone.
We don't know. Well, we don't know what you're risking. Yeah, yeah. At least testosterone, if you take a testosterone, which I'm not advocating for, but at least when you take testosterone, You know exactly
there's
what it's going to do.
Research there. Yeah.
Not only research, but you know what it's going to do. It's in your body already.
Yeah.
With a SARM, you're taking a chemical that we don't know everything that it does. In fact, I did a lot of research on SARMs a couple years ago because someone brought them to my attention, and back then it wasn't that well known. So I was like really into, like, what is this new, you know, drug that they're developing or they're working on? And you read the forums, and people will talk about these side effects that you should expect, but it's not a big deal. One of the side effects is a yellow tint to your vision.
Holy shit.
So and, you see like a bat now.
And a loss.
It's
and
like it, blue blockers constantly.
And, and a dramatic decrease or loss of night vision. So guys will go outside at night and be like, oh, it takes me 15 minutes to adjust to the night. Yeah. Or I can't drive at night right now on it, so I have to stop
blink 50,000 times, and then it finally opens.
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? What if you go blind? Is it worth it for like 3 pounds of muscle? And yeah, that's how much you gain, by the way, is like 3 pounds of muscle.
All right, you went blind from masturbating, so this is fine.
Which you lose when you go off of them anyway. So my strong opinion on SARMs is don't take SARMs. It's stupid. It's totally dumb. If you're going to go the route of taking some illegal shit, go take steroids. At least you know what they're doing. But it's like the biggest. It's like this. You're getting a lot of people talking about because I'm going. If you like you said, if you Google, you see all these bullshit articles trying to sell you their research
marketing,
chemicals.
Man. Yeah, they ninja everybody.
No, it's a scary thing. And I just if you're willing to try that, right? Then to me, I feel like I would personally much rather go somewhere where I feel like something has been studied for a lot longer. We know. We understand the dosage longer. We know what it looks like. So we see humans that are walking around right now that have taken steroids for 30 years of their
There's
life.
Hormone so, replacement therapists like revolving around it.
Exactly. It's become, I don't know. I'm not comfortable with doing something that affects me hormonally like that, there's not enough research around it to make me feel comfortable. You know, and who's to say, maybe we are wrong. Maybe that in 5 years they nail it down and it's.
I still wouldn't. I'll tell you why. Even let's say it gets approved by the FDA, passes phase 3 trials. Here you go. It's a new drug we're going to use for men with low testosterone or for women with osteoporosis or whatever or for people with muscle wasting disease because those are the reasons why they're studying them. Let's say it's passed and it's an FDA and now it's passed by the FDA. It still has compared to testosterone. Very little research behind it. How many? Think about all the drugs that have got recalled last year alone by the FDA, that got approved by the FDA. That all of a sudden we're like, oops, we just discovered this causes cancer.
We didn't realize it takes 10 years for it to develop the cancer, right?
Yeah, No. I'm sorry. I'd stay away from SARM. And like again, if you're trying to build muscle with SARM, they don't even build muscle that well. Go ahead and read on the forums how much people are gaining 5 pounds of muscle to take 100 times what the studies or the early studies are doing on animals to risk what? Totally not worth it. You know what it reminds me of? So last year, if I'm not mistaken, about 6 people died from synthetic marijuana. These are the fake the fake marijuana that you can buy like at the gas station, like it's called Spice or whatever, where scientists, these garage scientists are taking chemicals and making them so that they can act on the cannabinoid receptors and get you high, but they're technically legal through this loophole, the same loophole that SARMs are legal through, right? So they're inventing these chemicals that'll do this. And plus, if you get drug tested for marijuana, you'll show up negative, even though you're taking these synthetic cannabinoids. But there's been 6 deaths attributed to these last year alone. And every year, people go through will die from the use of synthetic marijuana. And last year, how many people have died from marijuana? 0. Actually, the last 10,000 years, how many people died of marijuana?
Right.
0. This is it's a great example of you've got the natural thing. We're trying to figure out a chemical version of it, and we end up doing some crazy shit. That's exactly what SARMs are. Mark my words, stay away.
This next question is from Eyes Amazing. When I bench press, I don't really feel it in my chesticles.
Chesticles.
How do I get my pecs to fire instead of my shoulders or triceps? I've tried close grip and wide grip bench. Nothing is really working.
This this reminds me of when we've done episodes on how to build.
I love that a female asked this question, too. It's awesome.
She's on her forum.
Yeah,
love her.
She's a badass.
This reminds me of when people ask me like why they can't build their glutes even when they squat and deadlift.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have a poor connection to your chest. So even though your form looks good and you're moving the weight, your chest is working, by the way. It's just not working to its fullest capacity. And what you need to do is learn how to connect to your pecs so that when you do an exercise like bench press, you end up feeling it more. One of the things you can do in the bench press, because then there's going to be a lot of, I guarantee we're going to end up talking about like techniques you can do outside the bench press, but
priming,
while you're doing the bench press, is to remember the function of the pecs, which is to bring the humerus, that's the top part of your arm, in towards the center line of your body. So while you're pressing the barbell off your chest, pull your, don't slide your hands on the bar, keep your hands tight on the bar, but imagine you're driving your hands in and bring your elbows in as you come up. So you want to create this inward tension as you press up, as you press the bar up. But you're going to have to go lighter with your weight and slower to really focus on this. And then you should start to feel your chest a little bit more. I don't know if you guys want to talk about
priming. Yeah, well, a couple things. One, I find this really common when I used to get clients that had got breast implants and they weren't really like fitness people before. Like say I get this girl who's 30 years old or so, she got breast implants at like 25 or so, never really trained or lifted weights, finally at a point in her life where she feels it's necessary for her to come in and really get serious about her health and fitness. And she's one, never really trained the chest, which is already a challenge, right? So mechanically, when everybody, majority of all humans suffer from some sort of upper cross syndrome where our shoulders are rounded forward and our head is forward, when we're already in that position, the bench press becomes one of the hardest exercises to teach somebody mechanically because of the dysfunction, right? Because we are so rolled forward and used to using our shoulders and our everyday motions because of our posture. So already it's challenging. Then you get somebody who maybe has breast implants where they've gone in there and, you know, shoved fake boobs and busted up their chest and they stayed away from exercising it for a long period of time and moving it. And then the body has to overcompensate with other muscles. And now they've trained to use these other muscles to do these pushing movements. So super common with that. 100%. This is like why Prime and Prime Pro was created. I mean, we created this program because we knew that this is there's a lot of people that can relate to not being able to feel this. I can count many, many clients that I spent months actually getting them just to feel an exercise like a bench press because of their posture was so bad. So addressing your posture. Now, some basic moves for takeaways for those that don't own Prime or Prime Pro already. I love to take someone like this and lay them on a foam roll. So I run the foam roller down their spine and I do some like dumbbell chest flies with 15, 20 pounds. And I actually want you to, and what I'm doing is I'm allowing the foam roll to open up your chest and scapula, and it'll, and the gravity will naturally drop your shoulder blades because there's no support for the shoulder blades. So it helps.
Increases range of motion a bit and the capacity there. Yeah.
Yep.
That's a great one. I honestly, I feel the same way with just getting into the posture of it first and really, you know, working on connecting to that process, you know, through mobility and being able to properly retract to the range that like you're capable of getting to. And maybe that's something that you might want to consider working on for a while in order to then, you know, retract properly and depress properly and be able to sustain and hold that in an isometric position. So if I take that as a focal point, and then I apply it to the position where I'm laying down. So this is where, like, I guess there might be some controversy with the way that you, you know, power lifters do it versus like bodybuilders, right? And connecting to the chest. But for me, I always tend to lean more towards, you know, a nice open chest. So I'm going for full range of motion and I'm really relying on the stability there with my shoulder blades to keep me nice and tight in that full retracted position. And then that open position is really going to allow me to, now I'm going to squeeze and work on all these other techniques where, like, say I'm at the bottom of the rep and I want to squeeze and connect to that piece, like Sal's talking about squeezing and bringing it inward, you know, as I'm pressing up, you know, techniques like that to help to connect to the process more. But
yeah. To piggyback off your isometric thing, that I, this is something that I used to love to do. If someone, I mean, because sometimes you'll get clients that are just, no, you do all these things and like, I can't feel it. I still can't. Stubborn, still, yeah, right. It's really stubborn. So the next progression for me helping someone feel it in their pecs is lying on that foam roll. I'll have them grab like real light 5-10 pound dumbbells, open them all the way up in the fly position, and then I will resist them trying to close until I can get them to feel it where I want. So they're in the fly position. I'm holding the dumbbells down, not allowing them to close it together, and getting in an isometric hold and getting them to focus on their chest in that isometric hold until they can figure that and not stress it with the arms, not stress it with the shoulders. Then once they can connect it to the chest in that position, then I can release with my hands.
Incrementally making your way up those. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you squeeze like 5-10 seconds in the end range, and then slowly make your way up inch by inch.
And here's something easy, too, that you can do. This is really easy. This is what I did early in my career before I really understood priming, is if I had somebody who didn't feel their glutes or their hamstrings or their quads or their chest or, you know, another prime mover of usually compound movements, is I would have them do one or two isolation exercises for that muscle, and then I'd move them to the compound. So like, if you don't feel your chest when you're this is easy, by the way, you don't feel like you're not feeling your pecs with a bench press, go do 3 sets of cable crossovers and really squeeze the hell out of your chest and really feel the burn and the pump in your pecs. Yeah. Then go bench press and boom, before you'll feel those pecs start to work because it's already, pumped.
And that's
already,
what I meant by getting on that foam is you do that first and then you go over to the bench press. Because I know this is a bench press question. Like if you do that first, you'll feel it in your chest, and then you go to bench press, and it's a lot
easier. I had trouble feeling my chest with bench press for years.
So did I. So that I can definitely relate to this.
Yeah, and I did what I ended up doing, and this, again, before I understood priming, I was a kid, is I did flies. I would do flies before I pressed, and I just did that for a year.
You know what's really funny? Like, come to think of it, a long time ago, I used to get made fun of a lot before I would go to bench because of my ritual. And my ritual, I would get to the bench and I would kind of open up and like get in this like dynamic stretch like really quickly. So I would do like almost like throwing my arms back and opening my chest. And then I would lay on the bench and I would go through this like pump kind of simulating like plyometric type movement. And I would just do that like totally like intuitively, like not even realizing it was a thing or anything, but everybody used to make fun of me for that. But I would get like way better connection.
You were brilliant without even knowing it.
Every time.
Or as Adam would say, idiot servants.
It's servants too, yeah. Exactly.
Quick commercial break, you guys. We keep getting asked all the time, how can I support the Mind Pump family? Here's one of the best ways you guys can. You guys love that Chimera coffee that we have. Chimera coffee with a K. You go to chimeracoffee.com, put in the discount code Mind Pump for 10% at the checkout. Also, if you guys want to know how I have this luxurious beard and you want one too, go to BigTopBeardCompany.com, put in the discount Mind Pump again, but this time for 33% off. Also, you guys, if you guys have not tried Ben Greenfield's new bars out, they're fantastic. If you want some, go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/NatureBite, put in the code Mind Pump and get 10% off. Go check it out.
Next up is Dave230686.
Okay. Beep, beep, boop.
Yeah, binary.
My name
binary.
Is Dave, 230-235-9er.
Kettlebell swings or hill sprints for burning fat? Which is most effective and why?
So this reminds me of a question I got on Instagram. I was going to tell you guys earlier, and then you cut me off.
Wait.
Someone asked me a question on Instagram. It was real simple. What's the best way to burn belly fat? You know, when you get a question like that, you're like, oh, God.
Those are awesome.
Where like, what am I? Like, this? There's a fucking million. So you know what I started doing from now on? Mm. When someone asks me that, I just give them a straight, like a flat. So it's like, what's the best way to burn belly fat? And I'm like, MAPS Anabolic and MAPS Prime. And they got it. They ended up buying the program.
They're like, cool.
They're like, all right, well, there you go. I guess that's a good start. The which one's better for burning body fat? Okay. So
well,
this is going to be tough.
It's not that tough. And I'll tell you why it's not that tough, because they're so different, right? It's if you were to ask something like hill sprints versus running on the ground flat versus ropes versus jump rope, or those are all kind of similar. The kettlebell swings are definitely way more taxing on the body and can definitely end up hindering what you do the next day. So I feel like, especially if you're doing kettlebell swings with some decent weight. I mean, I guess if you're doing
it depends how far the sprint. I mean, how hard the sprint
man,
is.
I've been pretty fried after doing hill sprints.
They're both
One of them's going to fry you more CNS. One's going to fry you more physically because of
muscular endurance wise.
Yeah, exactly. So you're swinging a kettlebell.
It depends how it's done. Mm. A hill sprint is anaerobic, right? Because he's already wrote the, that was in the question.
We're
going to
go down this rabbit hole right here.
Yeah, sprint is anaerobic.
Semantics. Here we go.
Kettlebell swings can be anaerobic or it can be endurance. Like if you're doing kettlebell swings.
Exactly. If you're doing hard style, we just went over this in the YouTube series with Mike, actually. It's kind of good to bring that up. We evaluated this hard style, which is like the way that Russians are typically known for, versus like the kettlebell sport, which is all the technique is based off of energy management and how much they could endure
conserve.
Like long periods
yeah,
of time of
conserve,
swing,
yeah.
swinging. So yeah, there's a different way to do it. And so I guess, yeah, again, this will all involve like how much like fast twitch response are you trying to recruit versus like, more of an endurance.
Well, I'll tell you like how I would like prescribe it to a client, how I would decide how I would do it is which one has more carryovers into something else that is a priority to me. So let's say I was playing in a men's basketball league not that many years ago. So having some sort of like ability to sprint like up a hill or period sprinting outside on the ground, like I would like that would carry over in my journey to lean out and burn fat in addition to give me some benefits to the sport that I was playing. Where a kettlebell swing, sure, it has some carryover, but not as much carryover as the hill sprints would be for that sport. Now, maybe I have a poor connection to my glutes or my hip hinge is not that great and I'm working on my deadlift and my squat a lot and there's a lot of great carryover from the kettlebell swing over into movements like that, or maybe just I want a better butt. I would probably do some kettlebell swings, but from a fat burning, I guess it would really depend on which one you were doing last, right? Like if you were using kettlebell swings for the last couple weeks for your burning fat and then actually going to do hill sprints would be awesome to continue on that progress of burning fat and then vice versa.
Here's why I like hills. All things being considered, of course, all things being equal, I should say. If we have to pick on a head-to-head comparison, sprints versus swings, specifically for fat loss, first off, I prefer anaerobic activity for fat loss than I do to endurance type activity or aerobic activity, because anaerobic activity promotes or at least maintains muscle and metabolism versus aerobic activity tends to promote the adaptation that makes you more efficient, therefore slowing your metabolism down. So if we're comparing them head to head and everything else is equal, here's why I like sprints better. I like sprints better because I can go max out intensity, short distance, and make it really anaerobic. With kettlebell swings, it's much more technical, and I can't go all out with kettlebell swings for 30 seconds like I did with sprints because my form's going to fuck up and it's going to be...
Well, and there's a lot of momentum in, this whole pendulum process. Like it's, like you said, it's a very skillful movement, but it's also like you have to get into a zone and a rhythm with it that is consistent.
With sprints, you could just drive.
You just go balls to the wall. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if
I would tend to lean in that direction.
There's
as well.
There's no doubt, though, the best, if you enjoy both, is to do both and to...
Whichever one you're not doing, which is what we tend to...
Here's the thing.
Don't talk about...
I don't think you should do either one to burn fat. Don't look at them that way. I'd say do sprints to improve your power or your VO2 max or athletic performance. Do kettlebell swings because it's part of your exercise programming.
And it's more technical.
More technical.
That's what I meant by that. Yeah. Whichever one has more...
Sprints are harder on your body.
Whichever one of them, to me, has more carry over into your personal goals. I tried to draw the analogy there with my basketball. I probably didn't hit very well, and I know I lost Sal. Well, but that was the point of me...
What's basketball?
Yeah, that was the point of me saying that was... That's how I would really decide that, because really, I'm not a fan of using cardio as the main way of burning fat in the first place.
Well, not even
You don't need cardio to burn fat.
Yeah, it's like... Sprints, if you're going to talk about injuries, one of the single most like exposing exercises you could do to show you where your imbalances lie and your body will talk to you almost immediately is to do a sprint.
It's true.
Like honestly, like, and I love keep maintaining like athleticism and trying to incorporate fast twitch movement. And I'm more inclined to do jump rope versus sprinting because of that simple fact alone. I don't do it enough. And it's such a, it's a thing that your body has to be very well versed in and respond properly to and fire on all cylinders at, you know, max effort. You know,
so
like
true.
It's like, dude, your joints are going to explode. Well, you know, if you haven't done it,
or you'll pull something.
You're going to pull something. Yeah.
Dude, if we took, you know, 20 random people off the street and had them sprint at their max out,
pulling a hammy, dude.
And had them sprint at their max full intensity for just 15, 20 seconds, like the 20 average people. I bet you the vast majority of them hurt themselves.
Well, especially with no warm-up.
Totally.
That's what I mean. Like,
most people don't even know how to warm up. Even warming up to that, it's like your body hasn't even moved like that.
For our age and older, but I mean, I guess if you're 15, you still have you're still 15, spry, so you can get up whatever. And do whatever you want. But I keep this in mind, and I know we actually haven't talked about cardio. It's been a while since we did a whole thing on cardio. You know, it only takes your body about 2 weeks to really start to become pretty efficient at whatever it is you're doing. So let's say you take off and every day you decide to do these kettlebell swings, and your goal is fat loss, right? Since that's what you're saying right now is, you know, which one is more effective for fat loss. And you've got the 14 days you do kettlebell swings every single day towards this fat loss journey. Well, by days 14, the returns are starting to decline, like, as far as, and I used to give these hypothetical numbers to draw this analogy for clients is, imagine that the first time that you did that session of kettlebell swings, your body burned, you know, 10 units of fat, let's just say. Well, the next time you do it, it does 9.5. And the next time you do it, it does 9. The next time it does 8. Then it does 7, 6, 5, 4. And it keeps going down. And so maybe for 14 days of you doing this consistently, you're still burning some fat, but now the body has become very efficient at what you're teaching it, and it does that quicker with things that are aerobic. So you want to make sure that you're staying ahead of that curve. So I'm looking at it like, okay, well, if kettlebell swings is mirrors something that I do more, like I do a lot of other kettlebell exercises all the time, so my body is very adapted, efficient to that. Going out and doing hill sprints, and I want the maximum fat burn from it, I'm going to get the most benefit from what's the least similar to what I currently do or have been doing. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. They've actually done studies on this where they'll show like a high level, very well trained, you know, athlete, like a swimmer, and they'll have them swim in a pool for, you know, a few laps or whatever, and measure their calorie burn, and it's like way lower than you would ever imagine.
Oh yeah,
because they're
so efficient at it.
Yeah, you know, their bodies have become so efficient at what they're doing that they're just burning less calories
on all levels. Right, it becomes mechanically better. It conserves
your technique, everything.
It conserves energy better. Your technique, everything gets better. I mean, we're adaptation machines. We're so amazing. It's so cool. And when you start to look at it like that, like, you want your body to start to adapt to a point, but then you don't want it to be, when you're using it.
How do you make change?
Yeah, right. And yeah. And when you when you're trying to burn fat, and
Nostradamus.
This is also why I don't, why, you know, I, all the time I talk about cardio. Oh, I'm so anti-cardio. Well, everyone thinks I'm anti-cardio. Like, no, I'm not about getting on and hammering myself on a machine or swinging away a kettlebell or sprinting up a hill, hoping that I'm going to shred all these ounces of body fat off of me, when I know that my body is going to figure this shit out real quick. Real quick, it's going to see great results from it. And then after that, I'm going to become very efficient. And guess what? If running up a hill hella fast is my main goal, I'm going to accomplish that pretty quick. But if my main goal is to burn fat, I'm better looking more deeper into my programming and my diet than I ever am on what's better for me to be doing as far as what exercise I should be doing to be burning this fat.
Great point, Adam. Check this out. Go to YouTube and subscribe to Mind Pump TV. We post a new video every
awesome video
single day. Also,
hype it up a little more.
If you want to ask us a question that we can answer on an episode like this one, the place to do it is on Instagram. The page to do it on is Mind Pump Media. We also have personal pages on Instagram. Mine is Mind Pump Sal, Adam is Mind Pump Adam, Justin is Mind Pump Justin, and Doug is Mind Pump Doug.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at MindPumpMedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.